Welcome to another edition of The Spirit Revolution. My name is Philip Coppens.
My name is Kathleen McGowan.
And our special guest today is Bas Steeman. Now, Bas and I met roughly about, I think, a year and a half ago. And Bas was a speaker at the Frontier Symposium, which must have been the Frontier Symposium 2009. And he gave one of the most interesting, detailed, and beautiful reincarnation stories ever. And at that moment in time, I said, Bas, we need to get you on our show. And so a bit over a year after this show has been on air, I fulfill my promise to myself to get Bas on the radio. So, Bas, welcome to our show.
Well, here I am.
So, for people who have never heard of you, which is probably the majority of our listeners, just tell us where your voyage on the path of finding out your previous incarnation began. Because really, you set out not really trying to find this out. It kind of began by accident, I think.
Yeah, you could say so. I was 26 and I was just working at a TV station. And well, maybe you know it's all about rates and viewers and things like that. And on a day, we reached a goal. We had, I think, well, for America, it's not that many people, but I think 500,000 viewers. And the chief of editor-in-chief, he said, well, I take you all out for a weekend. We go skydiving. Well, and I said, well, that was great. You know, it's not my daily business, but it was something I really was looking forward to. And all my colleagues were. But the moment we were in the dressing room and get dressed for the jump, I was, well, surprised by fear. And not adrenaline, but fear. It was like an inner voice, like, you know, it's like you're going to die if you jump. And I tried to ignore it, but the fear was too strong, and I was really sure if I would jump, I would die, and that was not the risk I would like to take. So I said, no, I prefer flying lessons. I'm not going to jump. And my colleagues thought I was a coward, and maybe I am, but I didn't jump. And that was in 1997, and years later. I had some little experience about what I couldn't explain. I was filming a war memorial, and suddenly I had a voice in me: "Hey guys, I'm there. Look at me, I'm here also." But I didn't use my voice, which was just a thought, because it would be insane to say to old man, "Guys, here I am." So that were two things, and where I think it started, but it took to 2005 when I made the first step, because I have written two books, biographies, and I thought, well, now it's time for a story I make up, like fiction. And I thought, well, it might be interesting to write about a different time path for the body and the soul, or something like that. And my wife, she said, well, you can write it just like, well, sit on your chair and write it down. But maybe you should do some more investigations, like, because there's so many books about things about the soul and the body and things like that. And I said, well, why should I? I can just want to write a novel, you know, it's fiction. So get rid with all the, well, spiritual things. But, well, I also like beautiful women. And there was a magazine, and there was a regression therapist, and she's called Ilja van der Grind. She's Dutch. And she's beautiful. And she used to be, I think, like an accountant before. So she was, well, with her feet on the ground, you know. And she wasn't suspected for me. So I made an appointment. I said, I'm a writer and I would like to write a book on blah, 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 blah. And she said, well, come over. And she had 3 hours of time for me. And I filled the whole time just by asking questions, because I, in the corner of my eye, I saw a couch and I had one thing in mind: I'm not going to lie on that couch. So I had this two. Well, I used the Waldorf and Stedford, the Muppets, in my mind. He said, "Well, boss, you better get away from the couch." So I asked questions. I keep on telling, and she noticed, and she said, "Well, next time you come back, and you shut up and go on the couch." So a few weeks later, I was there, and just for me, it was investigations, research for my book. And Ilya, she was looking for kind of entrance to my subconscious, and we came out with the fear I felt in the hangar in the dressing room in the weekend we were skydiving years before. And she keep on pushing, why the fear, what was the fear? And I was getting irritated, and she said, what do you mean, what the fear? And shut up, you know. But suddenly the two Muppets in my mind, they stopped talking and stop saying, "Boss, you're an idiot. Go to the bar or go biking with your friends or something like that." But suddenly they were quiet, and I started talking, but I hear my voice, but it was not, well, in a way, not me who was talking, you know. I described a situation of fear, of war, and I recognized it immediately where I was. It was like a movie. But you could also not only the visual things, but also the adrenaline, the fear, the emotions, and it was heavy. It was very intense, because I stepped in this story, well, let's call it a story, on a moment just before this main character was about to die. You know, it was fear. I recognized the situation. It was Market Garden, and Market Garden. Well, and maybe you all know it's well, you got D-Day in Europe, and you got Market Garden, the two biggest attacks of the Allied forces in World War II. And this was in Arnhem, and there were lots of British, also American, but in this part around Arnhem, there were the British Airborne Division was there. It was the biggest airborne operation ever since ever, So that's, I recognize it was Market Garden, and I recognize, oh, this is the Gingle Heath where it all took place. And I remember that I was hanging on the parachute and landed, and that there was one night I survived, and we were all gathering together and trying to spend the night between the trees, and we were walking to a city, and the day after there was heavy gunfire, and we were trapped because there were tanks, German tanks everywhere, and it was so scary. And I remember the thought, as long as I feel fear, I'm alive. But I was so scared. I was laying on the couch with this woman, and she was asking me questions, and I was just in fear and anger. And suddenly there was gunfire meant for me, and I was laying on the couch, but it was like the bullets were coming in again. You know, I was shaking, and I was shivering, and I was screaming and crying, because I cried because I knew I was dying, but I cried not about dying, but about that I was not able to tell the people I love, that I was not able to tell them I love them. You know, it's. That was the biggest sorrow. And when I, calmed down a little bit, Ilya, the woman, she asked, well, go back to the boy you are. And there were the Muppets in my mind. They popped up. I said, well, oh, this idiot, how can you say which boy you were? And but if you know, go back to the boy you were. And suddenly I saw pictures of the boy in front of a little white house. He was sitting on his bike, and he took the bike out of a little shed who was at the back of the house in the garden. And then Ilya asked, What's your name? Oh, there the Muppets were again. How do you know your name, idiot? And I said to Ilya, how can I know my name? And then she said, well, but what would your name be if you knew? And then I said, after a while, my name is Morgan. And that's the only, well, the most important clue I got, because if I had said Harry or Johnny or Philip, for instance, well, the journey was almost over, because there are many Philips, Harrys, and Johnnies, you know. But I said Morgan, and that's not a name, a very common name. It's a Welsh name, but I didn't know that at that moment. So after 3 hours, I was, well, broken. In the afternoon, I had an appointment with a friend to drink wine, but I canceled it because I was too shaky and too... Oh, I was blown away, you know. And I drove home, and I came home, and my wife, she stared at me, and she looked, well, what's going on with him? And my son, he was playing with a little kid. My son said, well, I think we better play We Are Statues now. So they were just, they were sitting in the room, and they didn't move. And I was just crying. Every song on the radio was a reason to cry. Every poem, everything was a reason to cry in those hours. And I think the same evening or one day later, I thought, well, it's a nice story, but of course I made it all up, you know. It's an idiot who believes that this is really my formal life. Come on. So I start to use my Muppet brain again, and I was looking on the internet, and I found the site marketgarden.com, and there is a whole digital roll of honor on it with pictures of the graves and everything. You can find it. And I found out that that there was only one soldier with the name, with the first name Morgan, and it was my first name, because I heard a woman, which I think it was my mother, call my name. And my mother and mothers don't call their kids by their second names, I think. So I think the first name was Morgan, and there was only one soldier out of Wales with the name Morgan. It's Morgan Probert. He's born in Pont y Dawi, a little village up on Swansea. And, well, I was crying in front of my computer, of course, because I think something inside of me knew that this was true. But, you know, I got to compete with the Muppets. and the Muppets, you were saying, well, it's just a name. It's a coincidence, of course, you know. But this Morgan, he died on September 19th, 1944. And I knew that Market Garden started on September 17th. So I thought, got it. I only experienced one night. This is two nights, so it's not true. Ha ha! Ooh, quite a relief. It's not true. You see, I'm just boss, and that's it. But then I found out Morgan was a member of the 10th Battalion, and the 10th Battalion was dropped not on the 17th, but the 18th. Mm. So that's one day before he died. One night. And that is number two. I got the name, I got the date. Wow. And then I said, well, the location, it must be in the woods, but close to houses, because I had some pictures of houses and gunfire and soldiers hiding, try to hide in the houses or in buildings. So on my birthday, my real birthday, my boss birthday, my wife took me out to the area where I died. That's strange, isn't it?
So happy birthday.
Happy birthday. I visited my grave on my birthday. How many people can say that? And but I didn't feel anything on that day in the graveyard, because I blocked it out, you know. It was Muppet time again. I thought, well, this, let's go home. This is it. This is ridiculous. We go home. This is not true. But we also found out the places where Morgan died, and it's pretty similar to the area I described. So this was 2005. And it was all about, well, you know, I wanted to write a book, fiction, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started writing, but well, I was too much involved with my own story. It didn't work out, and that's why I'm really I'm still writing on it, rewriting now. But so it took almost a year when I made the next step, and it was coincidence. Well, I think this is the kind of program I can tell the whole story. But my mother-in-law, she had a plan to meet friends from Canada. And they would meet in the south of England. But my mother-in-law broke her arm. She just fell off in a train. She fell and broke her arm, and she wasn't able to go to England. So my wife said, "Well, we can bring you, and we drive through South England to Wales." I said, "You're kidding? We go to Wales?" "Yeah, we go to Wales." Oh my God! So I knew my Muppets. The Muppets would say it's all ridiculous. So I said to my wife, Ariane, we better should book a hotel for two nights then, because I know the Muppets will spoil my first day. And then maybe we need a second one. And I was right, because we drove to the Ponte d'Arby village. And it's a village where, well, life is almost gone. It was a miners' village, and the industry closed in the 60s. So you would not be found dead there, you know. And we were there for 2 days. And the first day, well, the Muppets were in charge. They said, "Oh, I don't recognize anything. Let's go home. It's rubbish. You know, it's fiction." But the second day, we just walked into the main street. Herbert Street, and I was looking into a shop, and suddenly a man appeared next to me, and it was a little old man with a veteran's badge on his jacket, and he said, where are you coming from?" Oh, I said, "Well, I'm coming from Holland." And "Where in Holland?" "Ah, yeah, well, in the middle, from Zutphen. It's in the middle, it's close to Arnhem." Well, I just dropped the word Arnhem. And he said, "Oh, yeah, Arnhem, yeah." "Yeah," I said, "you know Arnhem, of course, Market Garden, yeah? Bridge Too Far." "Oh, yeah," he said, "I'm certainly do, because the crowds, they shot my neighbor there." "Oh, wow." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Your neighbor? Was his name Morgan Probert?" Well, you should have seen the eyes of this guy, this man. After 65 years, there was a strange guy from Holland, and I was 32 or 33 then, and 34. And I could mention the name of his neighbor.
Wow.
He said, "Wow." He was starting to shake, and, "How do you know?" And I said, "Well, of course, I'm a journalist, and I'm doing some investigation about Market Garden, and blah, 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 blah." And he said, "Well, you know, I can show you the house of Morgan." And he took a piece of paper and he drew some lines, some streets, and well, I was intending to visit it. And so we were driving to the village, but my wife and I couldn't find the house. And well, we went back to the hotel, and in the evening this old man appeared in the hotel and said, "Did you find the house?" And I said, "Nah, well, I think not." So he described another time, for a second time, where we could find the house. And he said also, "You know, Morgan's sister is alive, Glenys. She is up on the hill." And I said, "Oh my God, this is going too fast now." So I said, "Well, I will write you a letter with a letter for the sister inside of it. And because we leave tomorrow, blah, blah, blah." I was looking for an escape. And the next morning we left the village, but not before we visited the house. and we drove in the street, and my body was already reacting, you know, goosebumps. And when I saw the house, I started crying because it was exactly the house I described in my regression. It was a white house. I described the windows. They were a little bit different. But, well, more about that later. And I walked around the house and I saw a little shed, an original one, an old 60 or 70 year old shed. I recognized it, but I said it's not the shed where the bike was in, but it was there. And, well, in tears, we left the village and I decided to write the woman, or, well, the man, Billy, who gave me the address of the house. I wrote him a letter with a letter inside for the sister, and there were some questions in the letter for the sister. For instance, I would like to know more about the bike. Did Morgan have a bike? And a couple of days, I think as soon as the letter arrived in Wales, the daughter of Glenys called and she said, "Wow, we are so happy with your questions, with your letter, because my mother didn't talk about her brother ever. She blocked it away. And now she started talking about her brother Morgan." And a couple of days later, the letter of Wales from Wales arrived with pictures in it. It was the first time I saw Morgan in his face with his red beret on his head. And guess what? He was a biker, just like me. I'm sitting on my race bike 5 times a week, and so did he, you know. And my most, realistic friend, his skeptic friend said, "Well, there must be something from him still be alive in you, if it's true." So now this bike connection was there. Even he said, "Well, this is a little bit strange. This is a little bit too much coincidence, maybe." And Morgan, he was a member of a biking group, and he was one of the first boys in town who had his own racing bike. So this was strange. Also, the sister wrote in her letter that she never visited the grave of Morgan because, it was too much, too heavy. And I invited her, let's go. You better come in September where all the, remembrance are there and all veterans are flying in and, well, the commemorations are there in September. But she couldn't make it because she had another trip to do. But she said, "I can't come at September 15th, but I can come on Monday, September 18th, so we can meet September 19th.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, no. So I said to the daughter who I had on the phone, I said, you know what date that is. And she had no clue. Well, that's the day Morgan also flew in on a Monday, and we will meet the day he died. So there was silence on the phone, and so on September 19th, 2006, we met. Ariane, my wife, and I drove to the Gingle Heath, and I saw a couple of gray hair people, elderly people, I think 25 people, standing close to the monument. And they made a battlefield tour. And I instantly knew which one of them was Glenys. And I just recognized her, something in me recognized her. And she recognized me. For her, it was very easy because she knew I would arrive and I just walked through her. But something inside her said, "It's okay." And she's very, how do you say it, not easy with people. But now I was not a stranger for her, she said. She said it later. The first thing she said to me, "You are the reason I'm here." Maybe she meant just the letter I wrote, but these were her words. And I was so happy she didn't ask why I just write, had the intention to write about her brother. But I knew that question would come later.
Because just to intercept, at this moment in time, Gladys didn't know anything about the reincarnation story, correct?
No, of course not. I was just holding up the story. I was a journalist and just wrote about Market Garden. That was my cover-up. And because I had to find a way to tell her this story. It's not something you tell in someone's face immediately.
Right.
Maybe. So it's I needed time. Well, and I left her for a moment because they were this group was visiting some monuments, and there are many, many monuments there. And I said, well, I'm not going to follow a bus that stops every 100 meters. So I said to my wife, let's go have some apple pie and coffee there instead. And we will meet when Gladys come back and we go to the museum together. And we were sitting there in the restaurant table, and my wife was reading the newspaper. I tried to translate what it said in English, but I don't know if you would like to air that on your radio station. But in Holland, Philip, you can follow me when I say "Kijk nou, Tieten." Don't you?
Yes, I can.
How should I translate that?
Okay, I can't. So you guys got to come clean here for the audience.
Well, let me put it this way. My mouth fell open when I saw the newspaper, because it was written on it, "In a former life, we were brother and sister." It was just written in main characters on the whole page of the newspaper my wife was holding up. And it was the newspaper of 19th of September. And it was not about me, of course. It was about someone else. But the moment I was still having my doubts, the Muppets were in my head and said, "Well, you're not going to tell this old woman you were her brother, you know, you're an asshole. You can't do that. She will die. You know, she will have a heart attack if you tell her." And then I saw this newspaper. My wife.
So just to clarify, your wife is holding up a newspaper which has an article about somebody else in a reincarnation story, discovering that they were brother and sister in a past life.
No, it was about a love story, and just they say, well, in a formal life we were brother and sister. It was not about reincarnation at all, but of course there was a connection with the subject of reincarnation. But let me call it coincidence again. The coincidence that I was still having my doubts and my fight with the Muppets in my head. Should I tell her? Should I tell her not? And then suddenly my wife took one of the newspapers from the table, just to read it, and she was holding it up, and I saw these characters. So I wrote this text, and I said, "Wow! Now I know I have to do it. Now I know I have to tell her everything." And then it was the last how do you say it? The last little help, the last little sign I needed to trust my own story, you know? So we went to the museum, and it was too familiar, too close for people who just met. We were touching each other's arms, and we were looking each other in the eye too long, you know? Things you do with family, with friends, not with strangers, but we were no strangers. And then at lunchtime, Glenna's daughter, who came with her, Sean, started to talk Welsh with her mother, and unfortunately I don't speak Welsh, but I think Sean at that moment felt that this was not about just a book about a boy who was a journalist. She felt something, and then she said, "Well, finally tell my mother why you write a book on a brother." Well, so I told her this. Well, I tried to tell her the story. I just told you now. But my wife helped me because I was well, looking for words, the right words, hesitating. And then my wife said, well, if you believe that a soul and a body can travel together but also apart, then there is an opportunity for that this is true, you know. And then Sean and Glennis said, wow, I'm so, you have the right one in front of you, because we really believe that this is possible. We really believe in reincarnation, in spiritual lives. So that gave me a little bit more air to tell my story. And she was just looking to me, to my eyes, and she was concerned about my feelings, because she saw that it was pretty intense for me to tell this story. And then Glennis decided to not longer be part of the group who made the battlefield tour. She wanted to stay with me. And I said, well, let's go to the graveyard then. And she told me that she never visited the graveyard because of her mother visited once in 47 or 48. And after that, after she had seen the grave of her son, she had a nerve breakdown that cost her the rest of her life. So Glennis didn't visit the grave of her brother ever. And
wow.
she just blocked it away. And picture this. I was walking with her to the grave of Morgan. And in my arms, she broke. She started crying. And that's so insane if you think about it, that she cries and I'm holding her. That's, I just told you the story now, but I've got also a picture of this moment or shortly after. And you see just a picture of a young guy and an old woman on a graveyard. But if with this story in mind, it's not just a picture of an old woman and a guy on a graveyard, you know. There's something really healing. There's something coming together. And that moment changed her life and also my life. And we stayed together that day. I told her about the last moments of Morgan's life, and that he really died very quickly, that he didn't suffer. And that was a big relief for her. And in the evening, she sent me a text mail and SMS from, thank you, you really, really made my day. And, well, it was so, so intense, such an intense day. And she invited me and my wife to come over to Wales, which we did, of course, because the rest of the family was very curious about this strange guy in Holland who suddenly appeared to be the uncle who died in World War II. And they had also some tests for me, of course, because, well, also they have the Muppets in mind. And they showed me the house I described, and because one of the daughters of Glennis was still living in there. And so I could visit the house. And I walked with her and her daughters around the house, and I told her, well, this shed, this is original, this little one, but I think the one where my bike was in was a little bit more to the right. And now there's nothing to see. There's just a little garden, you know, with flowers and a terrace. And I saw the faces of them and said, well, yes, in those days, the shed was there. You see? Wow. Mm. Then we walked into the house, and I said, the windows. The windows are different. There were more. I think there was one window more in those days. And the front door. I think it's a plain wood, a little bit red, wood-colored door. No glass. And the daughter said, no. My grandma always had this door in her house. I said, well, then I'm wrong. But a few minutes later, we start to look in photo albums. And suddenly there was a picture of the house of 1943. Guess what?
Red door.
The door. The door I described. So this is what happened. But I was still the Muppets had saw that chance because, you know, I believed, but I was also still trying to not believe it. You know, it's to deny it. And ask questions about, yeah, but maybe during the regression, I shut off my firewall or something like that, and I just picked up some vibrations or frequencies of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible, of course, you know.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But then my mother, she cleaned up our old house, and she gave me all kinds of stuff, bags of with stuff from kindergarten, from basic school, and suddenly I found two drawings, one from I was four when I made it, and one when I was just five or six, and it's too strange. It's people jumping from a military airplane with red berets, laying dead on the ground.
Mm.
And that's not a usual drawing for a little boy who is 4 years old.
No.
Especially the details. The red beret, the German with their black boots. It was too strange. And then I thought, well, the Muppets, you better shut up. Case closed. So yeah, and I'm still in touch with Glennis. Not that often as years as last years, but now and then we call. And she visited Holland last 1.5 years ago, the moment when Philip and I met. She was there.
And just to give people who weren't there, and obviously this is radio by default, so even if there was a video record of it, you wouldn't be able to see it. But just when you were all on stage, you were there, Glennis was there, Sean was there, and Glennis, I think she was in her late 70s, roughly 80-ish at that moment in time.
She is almost 89.
Oh my God. But looks 10 years younger.
Yeah.
And definitely behaves herself 10 years younger. It was pretty much Shane who was speaking in front of roughly 400 people on her behalf. But there were moments on stage and afterwards, specifically during the speaker's dinner, where you could see the bond between you and her is that of a brother-sister relationship. And also, even though it was Shane, Sean speaking...
she was holding my hand. You mean,
yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. There was this just love emanating from the stage at that moment in time, when you were telling your story and then Sean was telling her mother's story.
Yeah.
And pretty much, this story is about you two finding each other once again after a life. But you've been mentioning it, how your wife has been very much, I think, pushing you and guiding you into stepping
me
over the boundaries. But also Sean has been very much protective of her mother, but also kind of like, you know, almost like, okay, you have to come through me because I don't want you to hurt my mum. But then as soon as she realized that this was absolutely real, she has become a very strong supportive force in all of this.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. Because she saw that the life of her mother changed enormously, because before she denied, she blocked it out. If she saw a veteran in the street, she took another road to her house. You know, she was avoiding it completely. And now she even saw the movie Bridge Too Far. You know,
it's, wow.
She can talk about it, and she said, "Well, in what way ever you brought my brother back to me." And her life is healed, but also my life, because during this whole voyage I had the eager to, I had only one thing in mind: I have to tell the people I love them.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last thing I had in mind before Morgan died, and it was still in my mind as boss, you know. It's And now I did.
So well, I think I was going to say one of the things I think is really beautiful too is that you were able to tell her that Morgan did not suffer, that Morgan died quickly, and you know, I think that that must have been a tremendous comfort to her and a big part of her healing.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, that's what she says. Also, that's the most comfort she needed. She was wondering how he died for almost 65 years. And now I could tell her that this was, well, it happened quickly, and yeah.
And how has this changed you overall? How has this changed you spiritually? How has this changed you emotionally? Where do you go from here? Are you writing about it? Have you written about it? Where does this take you?
Yeah, I'm still writing because, now I'm there's a little bit more distance between me and the story, so I can for writing that's better now. And but in my life it's changed a lot, I think, because I now I can understand some parts of my character, you know, why I react on that or why I don't react on things like that. So it helped me to understand myself a little bit better, and it's all a little bit also comfort in a way or not, because reincarnation or not, it's not a love story, you know. It's the chance that we will meet again. Well, how big is it? And do I recognize you then? And do you recognize me? So it didn't took away the pain of divorce or saying goodbye, but it's a relief that there is something bigger than I know. That's for me the most important thing now. And also, I met people after this who had similar experiences, not that clear as my Morgan story, but. Sometimes you recognize people. Sometimes before they know this, they know themselves.
Absolutely. And was it ultimately a huge revelation for you? I mean, did you have a belief in this idea of reincarnation and past lives, or was this really pretty foreign to you when you first got involved with this?
Well, I have an open mind, but I also have the Muppet mind, you know?
I love the Muppet mind, by the way.
Yeah. I'm
going to be quoting you now on the Muppet mind, because we all have these Muppets in our head, right? We all have the Muppets in our head who heckle us and make fun of us and say, no, don't be stupid.
It sucks. Yeah. So, yeah, well, I lost your question. I'm still picturing the Muppet still.
did you believe in reincarnation before all this happened?
Oh yeah. Well, I'm open minded, and I think I did in a way, but for my wife, for her, it was like, of course, you know, there's more, and we are all connected, and for me, I was just opening. I was. Late in 25, 26 when I met my wife, and she was really, she's a little bit older and wiser, much wiser. And she, for her, it was just like eating, drinking, talking about afterlives and connections. And for me, it was a new world, but I was very interested. But the Muppets were strong, and now the Muppets are, well, they're still there, but they are softer, more open-minded also. the milder Muppets I got in my mind now.
Now, do you talk to your children about this? Have you talked about this with your kids?
I got one son, he's 10 now, and he thinks I'm a little bit strange or a little bit, well, mad or, but, well, he's open to it. But he still thinks it's a little bit strange, Daddy. How can you be how can you be a soldier in the Second World War? And well, yeah. of course, it's strange. When you think with your Muppet mind, it's strange. And there will be a day that he, maybe not, or he that he will understand. And but he lives with it. He knows. I got a sister in Wales of 89. So, mm-hmm. big deal, you know. It's your life, he said. No, yeah. Yeah, but it's, yeah, well, it's but the Frontier Symposium was the first time I told my story. And that was a pretty safe audience, of course. But, well, it was a big step because now I'm ready to spread the word, or how do you call it?
So you have identified this previous life. You have done, I think, what you wanted to do. Did you explore Morgan's life more? And also, have you done other hypnotic sessions trying to find out more about this previous lifetime and or other lifetimes?
Oh, no. I was so blown away by the first one. It took me years to get over that one. So I'm a little bit scared for another. it was so clear, Philip. It was so the experiences were so heavy, and it's now 5 or 6 years ago I did the regression, but it's I think just since 1 or 2 years I don't start crying when I see a soldier or when I see war movies, or you know, it's still so fresh. It's still so. Wow, it was so heavy to experience the experience of Morgan. And I'm still writing, and so I try to have some distance between me and the story, you know. So now, maybe in the future I will. And maybe I will jump out of a plane in the future, I don't know. But for now, it's enough. I'm curious, but in a way, but... every time when I was trying to find out if something was true, or I thought I make it up with my fantasy, it seemed to be true. So for me, it's so clear that I don't know if I need a second regression or so. And in a way, I'm scared for it. So.
Now, Glynis is a very private person, as you said. She's a very proud woman as well. There seems to have been something when you began to talk to her and you began to relate your story as to how you came to realize you were her brother. When I see Glynis and when I hear you tell the story and see her tell the story, there's almost as if there's something there whereby she knew in her heart a bit ahead of when the story was actually told to her, if that makes sense. Like, there's just this feeling I have that she recognized you as her brother.
Absolutely.
Did she tell you about that? Has she gone into detail about that part of her recognition?
Well, yeah, she did, but she doesn't need many words. But for instance, after, you know where the Krasnopolsky Hotel is, where the symposium took place. Mm-hmm. So you know also the area behind the hotel, the red light district in Holland, you know. Uh-huh. And she said to me, all my life I would like to visit that red light district of Amsterdam. And now I'm going to visit it with my brother. So we walked arm in arm through the red light district. And people were looking at us. Who's this young guy with an old woman walking through all the hoopers? So that's a way for her to say that she felt safe and that she used her sense of humor to say what's very fragile. You see?
Uh-huh.
And that's And she did after that. She did it another time by picking the chocolate next to my coffee. If you are my brother, you should share your chocolate with me. She took it from my cup of coffee, you know. So it's
She was so comfortable with you. I mean, that she could do things like steal your chocolate and walk through the red light district with you. I mean, I think that's extraordinary.
Yeah, for an 89-year-old woman, you can say so. Yeah. No, for her it's clear, but also since the first moment we met on the Gingle Heath years before. She didn't know what I was telling her to tell about. She didn't know what I was, going through. But the moment we saw each other, she felt I was not a stranger. And so for her, when I told my story and all these tests were there, and I told her about the front door and the shed and all the names and the dates and everything, and I showed her the drawings I made when I was a little kid, it's just like another way to explain what she already felt and what I feel when I see her. When we are on the phone, it's like we are just old women on the telephone, gossiping, and then she tells me everything about her family, about the grandkids and everything. It's just, things you discuss with your brother, it's it's strange, but
So in your voyage, what was like, I mean, clearly this death of and the circumstances and not being able to share or saying farewell and that you love them to your previous family, as I will call it, weighed very much on your soul, which is why it came bursting out during those regression sessions. But is there, what in all of this voyage which you've gone through since 2005, what brought you peace, or what was the cathartic moment amongst all of them?
What brought me peace?
What was the biggest kind of like, where did you find closure, so to speak?
The moment on the graveyard with her.
Okay.
When I had my arms around her and she started crying, and I comforted her, and that was the moment when, my shoulders felt much lighter, and my heart also, and. Because mission completed, it was there. I told her I was there. I showed her the place where the body was, and I told her where Morgan died, how he died. And that was the moment where it was all meant to be. It's what it was all about. That moment, I think it was there. Yeah, but for me also, I forgot Morgan died when he was 26, and I did a regression when I was 26.
Wow.
And this it was a small detail. So even the dates of the age, and it's coincidence maybe.
But I don't think it's coincidence at all.
There's too much coincidence for one story.
I don't think any of it's coincidence. It seems to me like a lot of things had to line up for this to happen exactly the way that it did, up to and including things like you ending up there on the 19th of September. They're just happened to be a newspaper that said we were brother and sister in a past life at the same time. I mean, there are just too many things that added up to, like constant signposts for you saying this.
Oh,
is
you're
on the right
track. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I could also picture.
Go ahead, sorry.
I could also picture when I was six, and there's a Sherman tank, like a monument on a dike in the west of Holland, and we were on a holiday with my family, and all my cousins and were jumping on the tank and climbing on it, and they were boys having fun, with smiling, and I was there on the tank. My father put me on this tank, and I was crying, and now I understand.
Right.
Why I was crying on this picture. So
yeah,
I was
absolutely.
Six. Yeah.
And do you feel like this changed the way that you think about death?
Oh yeah, death is no issue. It's of course separation from the human perspective that will be hurtful. I think forever or always be hurtful. To say goodbye to people you love or losing people you love, it's it will be painful. But the strange thing, the most beautiful thing of is I noticed during this regression is that I realized as long as I feel fear, I'm alive. And the moment I died, everything was okay. It was okay. It was great. It was okay. No pain, no sorrow, no regrets, no fear. It's all over and everything is okay. So it was, I'm not scared for death, but only the way of dying, maybe.
Right.
But not for death. And So that's change, I think, yeah.
Well, we have come to the death, unfortunately, of this show, mm-hmm. but there will be reincarnation for this show as well next week. But for now, we have to say thank you so much, Bas, for being our special guest.
You're welcome.
It was a wonderful, beautiful story. People who want to hear this again, they can. There are archives available everywhere. We are on iTunes. We are on the BBS Radio Archives at bbsradio.com. We are also on our own very own website, thespiritrevolution.com. You can listen to this interview on all of those locations. But until next week, from the two of us, Kathleen and myself,
the truth against the world.